This week, we round out the six-part series on Manly P. Hall's Occult Anatomy of Man. This week, we read Part 6, technically its own text, which shows up as an addendum to the book, titled Occult Masonry. What are the occult teachings within Masonry? Well, Manly P. Hall is not really going to tell you what they are, but he sure does dance around it with some very poetic sentences. He even talks about riding the goat and the lost word. But what is occult masonry in relation to the occult anatomy of man? Well, you'll just have to listen to find out. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 603. I'd love to thank our supporters of the program, those contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. It is because of you we can continue to make quality Masonic education week after week, month after month, and year after year. Since 2011, we've been doing this with your help, creating unique, trusted Masonic education and education to its what we might call kindred sciences, as Albert Mackey once said. How can you donate? Well, it works through Patreon, it works through PayPal, or you can do a one-time donation, however you'd like. It all goes back into the production of this program. So, thank you in advance. If you're curious on how you can help the WCY Podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. Thanks in advance. Now this week, as you know, we are finishing up our series on the Occult Anatomy of Man. We have been reading each part each week from the original text by Manly P. Hall, titled the same, The Occult Anatomy of Man. There are six parts. This week we're going to read Part 6, and what is interesting about Part 6, actually, is that it's called Occult Masonry, and it is a direct appended treatise that was initially published separately, but then later became part of the printed work in whole, which initially was just titled The Occult Anatomy of Man. Now, if you were to say, go to the Philosophical Research Society in California and go to the bookstore, you might see it called The Occult Anatomy of Man and Occult Masonry. But the section on occult masonry does not necessarily necessitate an entire new published work. It is no longer than any of the other chapters in the text. I also want to mention that we are on the cusp of releasing the Occult Anatomy / Temple of Solomon issue of the Lyceum, which is currently a publication of my design through the Grand Lodge of Illinois Education Committee. And this was requested by the members of Illinois. So, without any further delay, let's get into The Occult Anatomy of Man, Part 6. Note, to this work is appended a treatise, which was published separately some years ago, but has been out of print for some time. The treatise has a direct bearing upon the subject of anatomical symbolism, showing how the principles outlined in the preceding pages work out when applied to different world problems of today. Occult Masonry. To the student of mystic masonry, one problem eternally presents itself. He knows it under many names. It is told to him in many symbols, but briefly it may be defined as the purification and liberation of spirit and body from the bane of crystallization and materiality. In other words, he is seeking to rescue the life buried amidst the ruins of his fallen temple and restore it to its rightful place as the keynote of his spiritual arc. When studying ancient masonry, we are dealing with one of the first revelations of what we know as the wisdom teachings. Like other great mysteries, it consists solutions to problems of everyday existence. It may seem of little use to us now to study these ancient abstract symbols, but in time, every student will realize that the things he now casts aside as worthless are the jewels which one day he will need. Like the centaur in the zodiac, man is eternally striving to lift his human consciousness from the body of the animal. And in the three-runged ladder of masonry, we find the three great steps which are necessary for this liberation. These three steps are the three grand divisions of human consciousness. We can briefly define them as materiality, intellectuality, and spirituality. They also represent action on the lowest rung, emotion on the central, and mentality on the highest. All human beings are lifting themselves up to God by climbing these three steps that lead to liberation. When we have united these three manifestations into a harmonious balance, we then have the flaming triangle. The ancients declared God as the dot in the circle to be unknowable, but said that he manifested through his three witnesses, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Now the same is true with man. The part of God which is within each of us can manifest only through his three witnesses. The Father manifests through our thoughts, the Son through our emotions, and the Holy Spirit through our actions. When we balance our thoughts, our desires, and our actions, we have an equilateral triangle. When man's purified life energies radiate through these three witnesses, we have a halo of flame added to the triangle, in the center of which is God, the unknowable and unthinkable one, the Yod, or the flaming letter of the Hebrew alphabet, the abyss, which no one can understand, but from which all things come. The life of this unknown pours outward through the triangle, which in the higher degrees is surrounded by a halo of flame. The halo is the soul built from the transmuted thought, action, and desire, the eternal triangle of God. Among Masonic symbols is the beehive, called the symbol of industry, for it clearly demonstrates how man should cooperate with his fellow men for the mutual development of all. It also contains a much deeper message, for each living soul is a bee that travels through life and gathers the pollen of wisdom from the environments and experiences of life. As the bee gathers the honey from the heart of the flower, so each of us should extract the spiritual nectar from each happening, each joy, and each sorrow, and incorporate it into the great beehive of experience, the soul body of man. In the same way, it is said that the spiritual energies in man eternally take the life forces he is transmuting and carry them up into the beehive in the brain, where is kept the honey of oil necessary for the sustenance of life. The ancient gods are said to have lived on nectar and not to have eaten or drunk like other men. It is quite true that honey gained or extracted from coping with the problems of everyday life is the food of the higher man. While we eat at the well-laden board, it would be well for us to consider whether or not the spiritual man is also nourished and developed by the things which we have transmuted in our own lives. An ancient philosopher once said that the bee extracts honey from the pollen of the flower, while from the same source the spider extracts poison. The problem which then confronts us is, are we bees or spiders? Do we transform the experiences of life into honey, or do we change them into poison? Do they lift us, or do we eternally rebel against the pricks of the flower? Many people become soured by experience, but the wise one takes the honey and builds it into the beehive of his own spiritual nature. It is well for us to consider the grip of the lion's paw, one of the world's oldest symbols of initiation. In ancient times, the neophyte, on his way through the mysteries of Egypt's temples, was finally buried in a great stone coffer for the dead, later to be raised to life again by the master initiate in his robes of blue and gold. When the candidate was thus raised, the grand master wore upon his arm and hand the paw of a lion as a glove, and it was said of the newly raised disciple that he had been brought to life by this grip. The Hebrew letter Yod, which is used in the center of the triangle and is sometimes a symbol of spirit because of its flame-like appearance, means, according to the Kabbalist, a hand that is stretched forth. We understood this to symbolize the sun spirit in man, which is said to be enthroned in the sign of Leo, the Lion of Judah. And as the fruits of the fields and the seedlings are grown and developed through the sun's rays, so it is said that the crystallization of man is broken up and dispelled by the light of the spiritual sun which raises the dead with its power and liberates the latencies of life. The spirit in man, with its eyes that see in the dark, is ever striving to lift the lower side of his own nature to union with itself. When the lower man is thus raised from materiality by the higher ideals which unfold within his own being, it is said that the spirit of a light and truth has raised the candidate of initiation by the grip. Consider the symbolism of the two Johns as we find them in the Masonic ritual. John means ram, and the ram is symbolical of the animal passions and propensities of man. In John the Baptist, dressed in the skins of animals, these passions are untransmuted, while in John the Evangelist, they have been transmuted until the vehicles and powers which they represent have become the beloved disciples of the Christ life in man. We often hear the expression riding the goat or climbing the greased pole. This is of symbolic import to those who have eyes to see, for when man masters his lower animal nature, he can say honestly that he is riding the goat. And if he cannot ride the goat, he cannot enter the temple of initiation. The greased pole, which he must climb, refers undoubtedly to the spinal column. And it is only when the consciousness of man climbs up this column into the brain that he can take the degrees of Freemasonry. The subject of the lost word should be considered as an individual problem. Man, himself, that is, the true principle, may be called the lost word, but it is better to say that it is a certain something radiating from man, which constitutes a password recognized by all members of the craft. When man, as the architect of his temple, abuses and destroys the life energies within himself, then the builder, after having been murdered by the three lower bodies, carries with him to the tomb where he has laid the word, which is the proof of his position. Abuse of mental, physical, or spiritual powers results in the murder of energy, and when this energy is lost, man loses with it the sacred word. Our lives, our thoughts, desires, and actions are the living threefold password by which a master builder knows his kin. And when the student seeks admittance to the inner room, he must present at the temple gates the credentials of a purified body and a balanced mind. No price can buy this sacred word, no degree can bestow it. But when within ourselves the dead builder is raised to the life once more, he himself speaks the word. And upon the philosopher's stone, built within himself, is engraved the living name of the divine. It is only when this builder is raised that the symbol of mortality can be changed into those of immortality. Our bodies are the urn containing the ashes of Hiram, but our lives are the broken pillars. Crystallization is the coffin, and the disintegration is the open grave. But above all is the sprig of evergreen promising life to those who raise the serpent power, and showing that under the debris of the temple is buried the body of the builder, who is raised when we liberate the divine life which is locked within our material natures. There are many of these wonderful Masonic symbols handed down to us from the forgotten past, symbols whose meanings, long lost, have been buried beneath the mantle of materiality. The true Mason, the child of light, still cries out for liberation, and the empty throne of Egypt still waits for the king of the sun who was killed. All the world still waits for the Balder the Beautiful to come to life again, for the crucified Christ to roll away the stone and rise from the tomb of matter, bringing his own tomb with him. When a man has so lived that he can understand this wonderful problem, the great eye of the center of consciousness is enabled to see out through the clean glass of a purified body. The mysteries of true Masonry, long concealed from the profane, are then understood, and the new master, donning his robes of blue and gold, follow in the footsteps of the immortals who are climbing, step by step, the ladder leading upward to the seven stars. Far above, the Ark, the source of life, floats over the waters of oblivion on high, and sends its messages down to the lower man through the cable tow. When this point is reached, the door in the G is closed forever. for the dot has returned to the circle. The threefold spirit and the threefold body are linked together in the eternal seal of Solomon. Then does the cornerstone, which the builder rejected, become again the head of the corner and man. The capstone, long missing from the universal temple, is again in place. The daily occurrences of life are sharpening our senses and evolving our faculties. These are the tools of the craft, the mallet, the chisel, and the rule. And with these self-developed tools, we are slowly truing the rough ashlar or cube into a finished block for the universal temple. It is only then that we become initiates of the flame, for only then does light take the place of darkness. As we wander through the vaulted chambers of our own being, we learn the meaning of the vaulted chambers of the temple, and as the initiatory ritual unfolds before our eyes, we should recognize in the recapitulation of our own being the unfoldment of our own consciousness and the story of our own lives. With this thought in mind, we are able to understand not only why the Atlanteans of old worshipped the rising sun, but also how the modern Mason symbolizes this sun as Hiram, the highborn, who, when he rises to the top of the temple, places a golden stone upon it and raises to life all things in man. Well, there you have the full 6-part series. For a list of each episode, check the show notes. As I mentioned in a previous episode, I really was looking forward to finishing this up, not because I did not enjoy it, but because I was excited to share a ton of images I have collected over the years which relate to this idea of the occult anatomy in man. Many of you have seen some of these images before, but I guarantee many of you have probably not. So they will be there. It has been a goal for a very long time to be able to read this over the show and to do this episode by episode, and I'm glad I was finally able to do it. I will also share a link to the PDF version that we read from, which does contain a couple of intricate images, probably some of the better ones that have been produced over the years, and I would urge you to check them out. Any of the conversations that we have in the Craftsman Plus Facebook group will, of course, stay there. Please don't, share the images that others share within the group outside unless you get permission to do so. That being said, this last part of this book, part 6, was the addendum. It was a standalone lecture that seemed to be short enough to sort of fit in the back of this book. In fact, if you buy this book at the Philosophical Research Society, the contents of the book are part 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5. Occult Masonry is not titled part 6. It's just standalone. All that said, I want to thank one more time our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners. If you are curious on how you can help this program create awesome Masonic content, please visit wcypodcast.com and click on support the show to see your options. Or if you just want to go straight to Patreon, it's patreon.com/wcypodcast. And that's it for this week. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
That's it. Here's your up.